Hello, and welcome to Media Ministry at Holden Village. Today's date is Monday, July 5th, 2004. Today's session number is MES 2004-01. The speaker for today is Sonia Myers and Norma Crumweed. The lesson for today is Called to be Family. But what does that mean? Discerning what it means to be a Christian family. Let's listen in.
Okay, well, welcome to our series on discerning and called to be family, Christian family. What does that mean? We're going to spend a week today and Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, focusing on issues of family and faith, and the discerning and the summoning out that occurs within family in a variety of settings. And Norma's going to review for you a little bit of the overview of the sessions. Why don't we just do that, and then we'll introduce ourselves individually.
The reason I came up with this series is just to try to take a look at what is the Christian meaning as it pertains to families. We do a lot of family research together, and family is the focus of our nursing, and so we wanted to bring that faith element to life. So today we're kind of laying the groundwork as to how to discern what it means to be a Christian family. Independence Day, but Wednesday, we'll take a look at how do you craft and create time as a family, and what are some of those family activities that have meaning for you. And then on Wednesday or Thursday, then we'll be doing chronic illness in the family. And we have stories and examples from our research that you'll be able to learn how does a family cope with a member that's facing chronic illness. And then the following day, we'll take a look at the specific illness of cancer and cancer in the family. And then the following day will be Saturday, and we'll take a look at end-of-life care and how does that impact the entire family. So that's kind of what this series is about. And we'll start with the basic general information today, and then take a look at those other specific elements that pertain to family as we progress.
Okay, good. Well, I'm Sonia, and Norma and I both teach at Minnesota State University Mankato School of Nursing, Southern Minnesota, a state university. I've been there for 10 years, and Norma for 9.5 or 10. And we both teach, but we've had different experience background in our nursing practice. My background has been adult health and child health, so pediatrics in the hospital clinical setting, acute care and intensive care, as well as school nursing and parenting education and community kinds of things and home care for children who are medically fragile. So I've seen some of the gamut of that, and that really was where I got the idea and the interest in doing family nursing research, because I saw the clear connection between the health issues and family health and how they're so intricately intertwined. And so do you want to share a little bit about your background?
My name is Norma Crumweed, and my background kind of takes off from where Sonia leaves off with the pediatrics and family. I do adult nursing, and more specifically with cancer, gerontologic type issues, end of life issues, and most of my focus is in rural nursing. So that's kind of my perspective of family. So, and the session today, well, the format of the day will be, Sonia will give you kind of a little lecturette at the beginning here.
Yep.
And then we'll have some discussion, and we have some readings from the Bible, and we'll have some further discussion, so it's just kind of a give and take, kind of comfortable session. Just ask us any questions as we progress.
Okay, good. So as many of you are represented on here, I probably should introduce my family back here, the Myers and Cameras. My husband, Bill, and daughter, Britta, son, Christopher, Chris, and son-in-law, new son-in-law, John, and daughter Heidi. And so they will be keeping me honest while I'm doing this session. I'll not be able to embellish any stories beyond where they are and all that kind of thing. So that's good. I'm glad you guys are here. Well, of course, families come in all shapes and sizes, and manners of working and playing together, getting the family work done. They can be described by how they are structured. For instance, the traditional two-parent, two children, one to two children, a two-parent partner family where the parents are gay or lesbian, one parent with child and children, multi-generational families, couples with children, blended families, single families, or single individuals with significant friend groups. And as I talked about this morning, I think at Holden there are, I think, families that form in subgroups of families. And even as we talk at the Bell with couples or families that have been coming over the years, I think there are kind of these little sub-family groups that keep coming to Holden together. So that's another kind of family that is arranged and constructed. Families are also defined by how they function to do the work of the family. How families function creates their outward identity to the community. Families might function and have an identity as the family that's, for instance, overwhelmed with stress or thrives on stress. There are what we, in professional terms have called, and in history, the dysfunctional families, or the functional families, although I think that line is very blurry. And there's the high achiever family, the busy family, etc., etc. As we do our research with families, what we do is go out and interview them all. We interview them all in their homes, with a couple exceptions. And when we ask a family, these healthy families, describe your family for us. That might be a typical question we will ask them. They'll quick. It's amazing how quickly they come out with it. A farm family that has five kids, we're the big family in town, or we're the busy family, or we're the stressed family. It's a very quick response that a family can have. So that's something you can try with your own family to just say, how would we describe ourselves? Families are also different in how they process through their everyday lives. Processings are things like communicating, decision-making about money, for instance, or problem-solving, how to discipline children, giving or taking power about who makes decisions, etc., etc. So those are examples of processes. Family processes are evident in how the family appears or the family type. For instance, you might have a family that's very connected, might be an over-connected family, one that's constantly talking together and constantly connected. And on the other end of that spectrum, there might be the very disconnected family, and then all manners of being in between. So that connection is a big one, a big way that family processes occur. There's also a continuum of flexibility that we certainly have seen in the research that we've done. There are some families that are very flexible, in fact, so flexible that it's chaotic. Or there are families that are very rigid. And the challenge we all know, and you all may be from different types of families, or if you have joined in a partner relationship, when a really flexible person marries somebody who's from a more rigid family, and one is really connected and one is not. And so the family psychologist, Dr. David Olson of the University of Minnesota, is one that has created some measures that counselors and pastors use to kind of give a heads up to couples when they're going to join, and where they might face those conflicts. And certainly, it's a coming together of those patterns over time of processes. But regardless of what the structure is or the function or the processes that families utilize to do their work and play and caring, it seems to work for them all. as we interview them, whether they're healthy families not dealing with an illness, or if they have an illness that they're all dealing with, whether we think it's a functional kind of situation or they're processing well or whatever, they define it uniquely. They get through it. There might be some bumps, but families uniquely define who they are. And there's diversity in how they do that, and it all seems to work. It's kind of like, I think, the miracle of birth. I think it's like, I don't know how this works or how this all started, but it seems to be working for this family. And then, of course, there are those for whom help is helpful. I mean, where we can see them in the situations of illness where maybe they need a little support to bring them back up to who they are and have been as a family. These family structures, functions, and processes are initiated in our families of origin. But when it comes to Christian faith choices, intention defines who we become. Awareness of who we are and want to become as families calls for discernment, or the summoning out that we're talking about this week. Such discernment has a role in developing as a Christian family. Discernment is the process of perceiving clearly with the mind or the senses to make clear, visible, tangible, and recognizable. Discerning is having or showing good judgment or insight. So that's at the individual level, but if we take it to the family level, being a faith-based family requires a continuous process of discerning, interacting, to decide what is our structure, what is the function that we're going to use, and how are we going to process things. The faith that we bring into any relationship is a natural result of being bathed in the waters of baptism and in a home where trust, faith, and action on behalf of others is learned. Parents may faithfully bring children to God's house, place in their hands the scriptures, and raise them in the ways of a loving, gracious, yet demanding God. But based on our nursing experience and our research experience, we also suggest that the reverse is certainly true. Not all children and individuals have had the experience of learning trust within their family lives, or a learning of a gracious God. Perhaps it is quite the opposite. That's important for us as Christians to remember as we live and address the needs within Christian community. Each phase in family life brings new challenges and choices for discerning. For example, struggling to attend church with small children is not easy. It is a choice. Who can think about all the things that have to happen and then taking three little kids to church and balancing all the things that need to occur there. You know, as a parent who's done all of that, mostly sitting by myself in the pew, because my husband is a Lutheran minister who is up there doing his Lutheran minister thing, it is challenging, but you get through it. But I say a silent little blessing prayer for every parent who has those three little kids or two little kids that they're bouncing up and down, because it's a lot of work and it's an intentional choice. It takes work, but it's worth it in the long run. There are situations in which mobility might be impaired because of illness, a new diagnosis that creates a challenge for the senses, for instance, and how does that work? And who has the energy to do that while you're also managing an illness? Or when aging calls families to make choices about being part of a community, a faith community, or maybe transitioning to a new faith community because of transitioning to a new living place. All couples, as they form, go through times of discerning what is meaningful to them, the things they are willing to commit to together. Discerning the presence of God in family life calls for intention. Discerning the presence of God calls for us to be open to listening to what may be out there for us as families. But why discern? What's the benefit to families? Why do we care? How does that work for families? Well, simply, research has shown that families who share faith and are intentionally involved in a faith community that supports them are stronger families. There's a direct connection. Faith is also important to health outcomes for families globally and nationally. Religious community provides both tangible and intangible sources of social support. You can probably think of those examples from your own faith community where you know the prayer chain is praying for you, or somebody brings a hot dish to you, or someone bakes a cake when you have a status in your family. And that's okay, come on in. I told the story this morning and I'll repeat it. I remember how meaningful it was to us as a family to walk into the visitation for my father and see the bouquet of flowers from our church. Those kinds of things have great meaning for you, and you sense that tangible support for you. And the intangible, the more mystical support of prayer, and you know the power of prayer for your family. Faith is also influential in many families related to dietary practices, family planning, choices on how you're going to raise and discipline children. Choices about medical treatment, for instance, may be imbued with family faith values. And also the last statistic, or the last theme statistic that I'm going to talk about is that it seems that, according to the literature, families who have a faith perspective and a faith background also have less overarching fear of the future. And therein lies a great opportunity for us as Christians to be able to, and not only Christians, but families of all faiths, when there is that higher power and that understanding that you're not totally in charge of everything, those families tend to have a sense of greater hope and perhaps some optimism. So faith really is a natural dimension of family life that's directly connected and interrelated with health. It's a gift of the Spirit. Faith is believing that something is true and then trusting that truth. Beliefs that we hold are things like, as families, God is here and God listens. Or if I trust God, I don't need to be worrying about everything. Because I have faith, I can act upon my faith even while spinning through life, even while running my everyday life. If we trust the truth of Jesus as the guide in this Christian family journey, we choose actions. They may be actions within the church, or actions that we choose because we are Christians. These are actions that we do in all aspects of our lives because we are Christians. Actions in families may be things like dinner table discussions of career choices for young people, or political action, or social action in our communities. It might be in the openness of our discussing taboo topics that don't get to be discussed anywhere else. It may be about having discussions related to our sadness about the war in Iraq, and what can we do about it, and how do we interact with our God about this. We do these things because we have faith that we must, as Christians, be involved in life. We have been called to be involved. Within our homes, we incubate the faith of each other and choose who we are to become as individuals and the family. And at this point, I'm going to introduce a book that I did not order for the bookstore because it came after I found it, after I sent in the little order form. But there are a couple stories in here that I think are kind of nice in terms of help. It's a book called Sacred Stories of Ordinary Families by Diana Garland, who is a social worker in the South, took a year on a Lilly grant and interviewed over 100 families about what is faith to you as a family. And there's richness in this book about how families interpret and work through their faith lives. And I'm going to read three little stories. The first is a story about Shamika, who is a young wife and only child of a widowed African-American mother and a deceased Anglo-American father. When Diana asked her to define faith, she said, "It seems like faith is so much a part of me, but it's not conscious. It's inside me. It's like a thread in fabric that runs all the way through. You can't see it, but if you pull it out, all of the threads fall out. Even though you don't really see it, you know it's there, holding it all together. I believe in God that He loves me. that I can't control everything. I can't do everything for myself. I think my faith makes me stronger for the rest of my family. And the second reading is from Mel, who defined faith this way. She says, two things best describe faith in God to me. One of them is a story about a little boy and a little girl. They are late for school, and the little boy says, let's stop and pray, because they're late for school. And the little girl says, let's run and pray. That's kind of my faith, she says. I've got faith that God's there. I'll talk to him. I pray for guidance. Just show me, guide me, and help me be aware that you're guiding me, but I got to keep going. To me, those verses matter. She talks about verses, love your neighbor as yourself, and God so loved the world he gave his only son. Oh, and a third one is where Jesus said, in my Father's house are many mansions. I go to prepare a place for you. That's good enough for me, she says. And then the last story is about a couple who has a teenage son. And part of their action, their faith in action, is about friends. When Nathan has overnight company on Saturday, they know that they must bring church clothes because in the morning they're going with us. One boy has joined church with us. He has never been in church before. We encourage all of Nathan's friends to attend church. We're not to the point where we turn the kids off. One of the stipulations they all know, though, is that if they don't go to church another time in their life, they'll go with us. Sunday morning, we're going to church, and I think that's important to them. So those are some nice examples of just real, regular old families talking about how they do faith in their homes. So within family, really faith is created, faith is tested, shaped, and deepened. For instance, as the money doesn't really stretch as far as we'd like it to, within families, people learn to trust and to mistrust, whether or not it's safe to share honest, open feelings. Parents and families trust in God's guidance in parenting, especially in the twos and the teens, and as we launch our families. Within families, faith stories are created that last a lifetime, such as those that surround celebrations and traditions and coming to Holden or going to church together. Within families, we experience also the faith-shaking tragedies, such as the senseless death of a family friend in a drunk driving accident. Within families, we practice the actions of faith, such as table prayers and nighttime prayers and making donations to the food shelf. Within families, we learn the lessons of Jesus for forgiveness and mercy and courage and celebration and comfort. In families, we help each other through crises of faith, and we create our family themes. Within families, we share the presence of others that embodies the presence of God. We also share times of feeling God's absence. Within families, we learn to discern our gifts. Being an intentionally Christian family means we take time to reflect or ponder, even in glancing moments, to see clearly what we are called to do. And as families, here I'm going to kind of segue a little bit into, as we think of, as Norm and I talked about preparing today, we talked about the whole idea of family faith themes, and I thought how really fortunate, I mean, we just have been fortunate as a family that we have been grounded in a faith home, and I grew up in a home of faith, and we are parenting in that home, and we have some common stories. There are common Bible stories that we know and can relate to. And one of the stories that I think bears that out nicely and gives kind of a mantra of Christian family, so to speak, is in Romans 12. And so if you could turn to Romans 12, verses 4 through 21. Let's, if we can divide that up and have people read. Somebody start with the first four verses. this is Paul's letter to the Romans. As he's talking to them about how to be different than the surrounding community. And I believe that family is that little incubator still, but as we read this, we'll see how there are some messages here for all of us. First four verses, anybody?
For as in one body, we have many members, and not all the members have the same function. So we who are many are one body in Christ, and individually we are members one of another. We have gifts that differ according to the grace given to us, prophecy in proportion to faith, ministry in ministering, the teacher in teaching, the exhorter in exhorting, the giver in generosity, the leader in diligence, the compassionate in cheerfulness.
And 9 through 13.
Let love be genuine. Hate what is evil. Hold fast to what is good. Love one another with mutual affection. Outdo one another in showing honor. Do not lag in zeal. Be ardent in spirit. Serve the Lord. Rejoice in hope. Be patient in suffering. Persevere in prayer. Contribute to the needs of the saints. Extend hospitality to strangers.
And 14 through 18.
Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse them. Rejoice with those who rejoice. Weep with those who weep. Live in harmony with one another. Do not be haughty, but associate with the lowly. Do not claim to be wiser than you are. Do not repay anyone evil for evil, but take thought for what is notable in the sight of all. If it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live peacefully with all. Beloved, never avenge yourselves, but leave room for the wrath of God, for it is written, vengeance is mine. I will repay, says the Lord. How far?
Keep going.
Okay. No, but if your enemies are hungry, feed them. If they are thirsty, give them something to drink. For by doing this, you will heap burning coals on their heads. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good.
Thank you all for reading.
Thank you. I think if there's any, there are several texts like this, but if there are texts that are nice texts to give you an idea of, if you have a parenting book, the parenting books tell you how to discipline and how to make choices related to when your child is 2, 3, 4, and 5. Well, I think this Romans text, for instance, is an excellent text in terms of helping our children, and as we talked a little bit about this morning, not only our children, but the adults in our lives who we might come in contact with, to demonstrate how the Christian might be just a little bit different. I still don't ever like that heaping coals part, but other than that, I just have a problem with heaping coals. But I think there are some really nice values that are kind of threaded throughout this, that relate to families and faith. So at this point, I'd like to open it up a little bit for your wisdom, because I know you have much wisdom related to if I am an outsider. We do the research in a variety of settings, and we know that there are things about families that only families know, and we only can know them if they're willing to tell us. And so we're going to ask you, because we're just always researchers, and it's the way we learn best about families, if you would be willing to share with us, how would I know that you're a family of faith? How could I tell? If I were in your family, how would I know that you're a family of faith? And out of this, we're going to look at some themes based on that. So,
do you me little things like, do we say grace before meals?
Yeah.
Or,
yeah.
And if it's over the weekend, do we go to church?
Mm-hmm.
And
volunteer in church.
Okay.
And also outside of the church.
Okay. In the community. Are you going to just be talking to us or in our house? Because, like, maybe religious symbolism?
Mm-hmm. That's fine, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What do you have in your house?
Well, we have a plaque that says, but as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord, that type
yeah.
of thing.
Yeah.
I have that same one in mind.
Music, the kind of music I listen to.
Okay.
That's what I was thinking, was music also. If children know the Sunday school songs and the scripture, just on whatever level they are, it's very obvious to others that they're being raised in a Christian family.
Okay.
Or in a religious family, at least.
Whether you teach the songs or they're taught in Sunday school or Bible school or
right.
Bible camp or Holden Village or wherever it is kids are learning, they learn songs. I was just telling the group that as we came here. We, as the Myers family, have come to Holden many times, and over that period of time, I still remember traveling with little long boxes of audio tapes. You guys remember audio tapes? We still have many boxes of those that have children's songs and all that kind of thing. And the We Sing Silly Songs tapes. You guys remember those? Anyway, we can do many of those. We just do a medley, like one after the other after the other. And poor John just wasn't necessarily part of our little song singing group during that period of time. So Norma, thank goodness, bought us a new CD on the way out, and so now we're all singing new songs. They're not necessarily Christian songs all, but the idea is the connections that we create. And the two boys can do quite a nice rendition of two young men could do quite a nice rendition for you if, you know, afterwards. If you'd like.
She also
but,
said literature.
Okay, literature. What about literature? All kinds of people read, right? So what about literature gives a sense of Christian faith? Where that was. Other people utilize literature in your homes? Yes.
Well, we are a family of great readers, and I don't think that, you know, there's a Christian literature that we read. We read really widely, my
mm-hmm.
right? sons and my husband and me. But it's the discussions that we have about what we're reading, or the films that we go to see, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as parents, I know some Christian, or parents who would call themselves Christians or seek to be Christian, would say, well, we wouldn't go to see that film, or we might not read that book. That wasn't the way I was raised in a Christian family, and I haven't raised my children that way. The world is out there, and Jesus calls us to find out about it, I think,
mm-hmm.
and learn how to live in it, being with a Christian witness. So that's been more our approach, I guess.
We often talk about how literature is kind of a safe way to have big discussions because it's not you and it's not me having the experience, but we can talk about this character or whatever who had this certain experience and how that pertains to really pulling together that mystery of God's love.
Yeah. And I've loved to watch videos together as a family and then talk about them. That has been wonderful common ground I've found.
I call that something like atmosphere. A welcoming, peaceful, accepting.
Intentionally creating that?
Yes.
Okay. How do you do that?
Come on in, have a cup of coffee.
So is that hospitality?
Yeah.
Well, and you extend yourself beyond your church family. You know, who your children is going to school with. And prevent yourself from being insulated or isolated from who you're interacting with, who your children are interacting with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We kind of quit defining families a few years back because we didn't want to be inclusive or exclusive of any family type. So that's exactly what you're talking about. The definition of family for us is whoever they tell us.
Yeah.
It is when we're having that discussion because families shift and change.
In the family support movement, I've heard a definition used of families are those people who love me and I love them, and we may or may not be related by blood. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, but we like to play games together. Okay.
Sometimes it's just the simple words we say when we meet someone. We had a granddaughter who died in a car accident about 2.5 years ago, and I remember the first Sunday I came back to church, someone stopped and talked with a man, and I said, well, I don't know how you get through this if you don't have faith. And about a year later, he had a heart transplant. First Sunday he came back to church, he said to me, I remembered your words that I don't know how you get through this without faith.
Oh, I was going to say about like the atmosphere, mm-hmm. just have one thing that was always different in my family than most of my friends, not all, but most, is we all tried to be kind towards each other, towards the ones in our family, and we always say, you know, I love you to each other, and I noticed then it started happening where my friends would be over at my place more often and more often, I think because they enjoyed that kind of positive, loving atmosphere that they maybe didn't get at their house as much. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I was just going to add the hospitality theme. I think about my family. I'm a pastor now, and I think a lot of that relates to the fact that my parents were into foster care, and we always had exchange students in our house. We always had foster children living in our home, and my parents made it very clear that our family had a vision beyond ourselves to serve others, and those memories to me have shaped so much of what ministry is about. Mm-hmm. And then I was thinking, too, devotions, family devotions, and at least in my family, during Advent and Lent, we always had family devotions and had to sit around the table and light the candles. But those are good memories. So.
I think using the language of forgiveness really intentionally. I know I have 2 step kids, and then my husband and I have a child of our own, and I know when I was first starting to parent my stepkids, and you know, I was just like messing up right now. I was the one who was saying, you will sit in your chair and we will have devotion. But, you know, I would apologize for something and they would all say, oh, that's okay. And I'd say, no, it's really not okay. I need your forgiveness. And so we really start cultivating that language where we'll say, I forgive you. Which to me is really different than that's okay. Mm-hmm. But I think that outside of the context of faith, maybe it sounds condescending, you know, I forgive you.
Uh-huh.
But really trying to utilize that language.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and name it and
yeah,
claim it.
Yeah,
it's really okay.
Yeah.
And that's a very good modeling and role modeling as you're doing that with your children, because not only when you're doing it with the children, other people will be seeing you as well, being able to learn from that example.
Yeah, it might seem kind of foreign to people because I don't really like that Or like, you know, who are you to forgive?
I think what we do with our money is really important. And you know, are we a tithing family? Even beyond the tithe, what else do we do with the money that we have? And I know for my family, this issue really hit us all together when we traveled to Madagascar in Africa and lived there for several weeks and experienced, it's one of the poorest nations in the world. And to come back from that as a family, and that was about 8 or 9 years ago, and our values in how we spend our money, and what I saw in my son has just changed dramatically. And my oldest son started shopping at the Goodwill and the Potty Patrol. Those are his two stores. I don't know if you know the Potty Patrol. That's the free shop at Holden. And that was just one example, but I think Christian families run into that and should be talking about that together. Yes?
I think bringing people up to hold it is really good. Don't get started doing that or you get stuck. All your friends have been here and they all want to come again, and they want you to pay their way. But no, I was thinking, we came up here one time, a long time ago, probably 20 years now, and Warner Jensen was the business manager, and he greeted us so warmly, and he said, "Now, if there's anything at all that you need, just be sure and ask me, and I'll tell you how you can get along without it."
That's very true. Yeah. Yes, I'm a single parent of three children, and I was privileged to be a single parent. Anyway, last weekend, well, let me go back a little bit. There are three children involved who are now adults. And one of them is adopted. The youngest son, two sons and a daughter, and the youngest son was adopted. Mm-hmm. Okay, last weekend, he was married. He was brought up in the Seattle area, but he was married in Portland, Oregon. Well, I could hardly believe what this wedding was. Isn't that right, Bud?
It was
absolutely incredible. And the one thing that my children took to and relied upon was their church. And they were very active in the church and so forth. Well, we went to this wedding, and my youngest son was married. It was a beautiful ceremony. He's very much in love with a wonderful woman and all of that. But following the service, during the reception, he stood up and gave a little talk about his life and so forth. And in that talk, he said, I hope you won't misinterpret my intention here. During that talk, he gave me a tremendous tribute that he really was able to put it together because of me. And I'm sitting there shaking. But it was so beautiful because I'll tell you, life was hard. This was not all this was very, very difficult with respect to the divorce that took place and so forth. Mm-hmm. And the two other children were there supporting him at his wedding time. It was just absolutely beautiful. Mm-hmm. So I think we may have that on board, but helping to develop a working faith, which all of us have here, mm-hmm. in the children that you care for in your life.
Yeah.
Thank you. Can you see the pride in this woman? And that's wonderful. It's wonderful. It's a real tribute to your work over time.
Oh, with your soul.
Well, yes, and it ought to be acknowledged. It's a gift that you have that you were able to share your faith with your children
Thank
in
you.
Such a way in a very busy time in your life, a very stressful time, I'm quite certain. And
right.
And that ought to be commended, and it ought to be lifted up as a helpful example to all of us as we go through. So.
Thanks, Rick.
Any other ideas? Yes.
I see the language of forgiveness that is up there, and I think Christian families have a language of hope too. That I would want to add to that.
Okay.
Even in the, I'm just listening to your wonderful wedding story, and in the face of real struggles and hardships and things that could cause despair or cause us to give up.
I think working for justice issues, and that's kind of discouraging at times, and maybe that's the other. I hope it's hopeful, but sometimes it's discouraging.
But it's good to do it with family so that you have a sense of mission that is.
It might be clock rather than talk.
Yeah. I want to take just a couple minutes now to pull some themes together. We often, we know that as we look at how actions, remember a little earlier in my presentation, I talked about that as we have beliefs, we then begin to act upon those beliefs. And so I want to do a quick little spin around to look at, to see what is the belief that goes with this, because you know many times we talk about Christian values or maybe the media talks about Christian values, right? Christian family values. What is up here? I've already kind of started the list a little bit. Hospitality, that's a value, it's a way of being, it's a way of informing our life. What else is here that you, that the family values, the belief that they value? As we look at some of those things. One thing I think that comes through that seems pretty common is, and some of these are going to be overlapping, is the whole idea of connecting things like games and films and video, and as you read literature together, connection is important. Trips to Holden, maybe. Family devotions. So I'll put that all under connection. And then another one that came out too as I was thinking about how this all fit together was a respect for diversity. And that's clearly in the Romans text, that we're not all the same, and so what? That's just the way it is. And as we watch videos and look at literature and learn about the human condition as a Christian family, we learn to cultivate that respect for diversity of the human people. Let's see.
We also say it's how we use the gifts that God gave us.
Okay. So we value discernment, perhaps. We value service. I think there's that up here that is certainly important, whether it's being involved in the church or working for justice issues.
Yeah, perseverance might be
valuing the, it may be up there, but valuing the gifts
that various people bring to our lives. Mm-hmm. Gives them
I would really endorse that too. I happen to be clergy, and I suddenly, about 20 years ago, looked at the school we were having, and of the school we had like 90 families, of which, and I come from a base family, two parents and all. But I suddenly realized, out of 90 families, 82 did not follow that pattern. Were either single parent, gay and lesbian, all these various forms, and how they felt judged, or they felt pushed into this stuff. Mm-hmm. Or they felt we were looking at them as not quite having it. Mm-hmm. And that the single parent families, mm-hmm. those that can never be home, those that are in the poor category, mm-hmm. those mm-hmm. that don't have a parent, or there's never been a parent, it's mm-hmm. only a grandparent or an uncle. Yeah, we have so many of these categories, mm-hmm. but in the Christian realm, we sometimes are a little bit edgy on that. Mm-hmm.
So tell me the value of helping. Is it openness?
They know we're in those things. The one thing we often used is laughter. Sounds rather simple, but
maybe honor.
If we could laugh, we need to respect those various gifts.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying with you. When you said, because you as a single parent probably had to go through that 1,000 times. Uh-huh. You always felt on the outside.
Mm-hmm. Very true.
So many times family values is associated with the religious right, and they have a very exclusive definition, I think. And if we go to the inclusiveness, I think that makes the difference.
Inclusiveness would be maybe empathy.
Might be
a word.
Empathy?
Their longing is sometimes way above even ours. Their longing for keeping it together. That's why I'm listening to her. Like, I guess your story touched me at that because I've been there so often.
It's a longing. Is it a longing for connection, not only within the family, but between the family and the faith community?
Usually they don't have any clue what a faith community is. No clue, because they've never contacted me. It's strange. It's all I know is it's a good school or it happens to be a group of people.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
They have no.
Okay, so it's the school. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
It's kind of a different.
Yeah.
In a way, it's a graciousness. Well, grace in the big picture sense. In some sense, you don't have to earn it, but it's there, that respect or that honor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the language of hope and the language of forgiveness.
That forgiveness is good.
Humility.
Mm-hmm. Honoring. Honoring a child in a single family who is brought home up in war, need a very good report card.
Honoring each other within that. Okay, so honoring accomplishment. Well, because of the fact that I'm out of board, I'm going to stop. Other than that, now, actually, just take a look at this list and see what a nice book we could write about family values that I think would be a little bit of a different book than is currently out there. So those of you who want to take a new approach certainly can start just kind of discerning those. Yes.
This is, we look at this on a macro scale.
Uh-huh.
And you're right. When you hear the words traditional family values, go back to the 1880s, the 1920s, the 1940s, all of those appear. When you hear on the macro scale in the mass media and the pundits that come from the religious right, grace is not in there, honor is not in there, diversity is not in there. None of that appears. How do we reclaim that as a nation? How do we reclaim this as a world?
I think
how do we reclaim it as a Christian, as the whole body of Christ? I mean, that's my, tell me.
I think that's Wednesday. No, I think that's why we're here. Somebody said you have all the answers. No, we have lots of ideas. But I think family is where we incubate a lot of this.
Yes.
Certainly. And I like Paul, think that we have lots of things out there that we need to be mindful of. And I am also, along with Christine Carlson, the world is here. We are in it. We are its leaven, I think. We are its salt. And we should feel free to be speaking those kinds of words at our places of employment or on a grander scale. Not this last spring, but this spring 2003, I had an opportunity to testify in the Senate Higher Education Committee about nursing education is what I testified about. But I used the words of diversity and respect, and there are people who can't afford this education, and if you keep slashing these budgets, we will not have people to serve people. We have lots of, we have narrowed the field of who can come to college. And to me, that's a justice issue. And it may seem frou-frou to some people, but to me it's a huge justice issue because I know people who can't come to college now. Or who are coming to college and it's taking them 8 or 9 or 10 years to complete a baccalaureate degree because they work 35 hours a week. Certainly not enough for benefits because that would be a nice problem. So, I just think there are lots of justice issues in our everyday life that we can, so I have no answers. Perseverance, I guess, maybe is we can talk more about
that. The hope comes from your son-in-law here that he said his family was loving and kind and the kids came to visit and they saw that. Mm-hmm. I mean, and then that multiplies and that spreads out. Mm-hmm. I think that's what we do as a family.
We often talk about your family of origin gives you some structure and a way of viewing the world, but it's really through that intentional family that you can opt and make a choice in a different direction for yourself. So.
Good. Well, we do have a quick little handout that I'll just pass around that to give you some, and if you are a couple that two together, you want to share some of that. I can't remember if it's called anyway, it's our little formula for faith, discerning faith in families that starts, the F is fellowship, taking time, first and foremost for each other, because you need to know each other as family members. You are the center of faith discerning, the foundation of the Christian life in the world. A, the action, taking time to be active in your communities now and in the future as Christian contributors. The I of faith is taking time for understanding the meaning of events in your family's lives, whether it be in the local family or community or world perspective. What does it mean in your family life? Trust is the T, taking time to develop a trusting relationship with each other and with the God who you can depend upon. And finally, the H is for hearing, taking time to regularly hear God's word, hear God's plan in prayer and worship and in action. Because we know as we are active in the faith, we also learn new things. And so that's how that all works together. And I have a prayer to close with here that's based on Colossians 1, 9 through 12. So if you're, would please bow your heads or join me in prayer. Creating God, we ask that this family, our families, be filled with the knowledge of your will. We give thanks to you, our Creator, who has given us a family, the gift of your inheritance. Help us to lead a life worthy and respectful of you, showing your love in all of our works.
And as we work on this earth, with your will in mind, help us to learn to know you better. May we be strengthened as a family with all power according to your might for endurance and patience with joy. In your name we pray. Amen.
Amen.
Thank you. So thank you for coming today, and we'll see you at the celebration tomorrow, but Wednesday we'll have another session.